Invested with purpose, making the most out of your time, talent, and treasures. Pull up a seat and join us as we uncover powerful testimonies that are sure to move and inspire you. Meet Christians from all walks of life and hear their incredible stories that will both motivate and challenge the way you view the world. These men and women exemplify Christian values and biblical stewardship in areas of mission, finance, entertainment, sports, and more. Welcome to Invested with Purpose, making the most out of our time, talent, and treasure. I'm Brian.
And I'm Kara. And today we have Sam Sorbo with us, dedicated wife, mother, actress, author, and public speaker, and home education advocate. Sam has dedicated herself to empowering parents to take back the influence of their children from institutionalized education and indoctrination.
She has also starred in numerous films and television shows, even alongside her family in movies such as Let There Be Light, A Miracle in Texas, and Left Behind, The Rise of the Antichrist. Welcome to Invested with Purpose, Sam.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, thank you. We'd love to start with a little bit about your journey from being an actress to becoming a home education advocate and kind of what inspired you in this transition in your life.
Big change.
Yeah.
You know what? So I became an actress. I was modeling when I was in my late teens, early 20s, and I became very successful and I moved into acting. And I met Kevin, and at the time that I met Kevin, I had realized that I was going to have to compromise something if I wanted to have a husband and a family. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know what the compromise was going to be. And I thought, okay, I know that there's a compromise, God. What's it going to be? Is he going to be short? Is he going to be stupid? Is he going to be, bald? I don't know. Like, what's the compromise? And I met Kevin, and there was no compromise. Like, he was like, oh,
he was Hercules.
Fabulous. He was a phenom. He was incredible. He was conservative. He was Christian. He was clever. It's just everything. And then we determined to get married, and I was considering what that was going to look like. And it was a bit chaotic because I lived in LA. He lived in New Zealand shooting the show. I could go back and forth. It's a 13-hour plane ride back and forth. And, I was a career woman. I wasn't going to give up my career because that just seems silly. And so I was sort of trying to figure out what that was going to look like. And he got deathly ill. And he ended up in the intensive care unit. And I landed the best job ever for 3 days in New York City. And he was in L.A., I was in LA with him and I got the job and I said, they'll fly me first class to New York. It's a lot of money. It's for my favorite thing ever. Ice cream. Like it was the be all and end all because that's how God works. And I asked him if he wanted me not to go. And he said, yes, I want you to not go. he was knocking on death's door. He really thought he was dying. He felt like he was dying and he nearly died. And so in that moment when he said that he wanted me not to go, I realized it was a binary choice. I could have the family and the husband, or I could do my career. Mm-hmm. But you can't have it all because there's too much, And so I walked away from my career at that moment. So then if you fast forward with my kids, it just seemed like the logical progression. I tried to go back to work, and then one of my kids, my toddler, my youngest, came up to me one day. I came home from an audition with her little finger out. She went, no, 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 no. And I'm like, well, that's good that you know that word now, And I picked her up and she turned to the nanny and she said, bye, bye. And I thought, oh, so she wants me. And this is a binary choice. And I try to tell young women that we're sold a bill of goods. We're taught to pursue career above everything. And that's not the hierarchy. That's not where our priorities should be. And unfortunately, our world has transformed. And so we can't be reliant like we used to be on the traditional norms. Mm-hmm. Husband provides, wife does motherly housemaker type stuff. It's a confusing world, no doubt. But if you can manage it, I just found that I was really, this is my calling. My family is my calling. And everything else is secondary to that. And that's why I'm on such a mission to get kids out of schools, because the school forms a wedge between the child and the parent. It is the embodiment of the destruction of the family. It is the catalyst for the destruction of family. And now it's the catalyst for the destruction of children. Mm-hmm. And so if you're a parent and you have seen anything of what's been going on in the schools, whether it's Vermont saying the school can vaccinate your child against your wishes, it doesn't matter, to the school saying to the parent, we're transitioning your child, there's nothing you can do about it, you need to butt out, we're not going to tell you what's going on. All of those things, just say no. Just nothing is worth that risk. I told you I just came from another interview and I said, you're playing Russian roulette with your mm-hmm. kids' lives, mm-hmm. and every chamber is loaded but one. It's the reverse of the Russian roulette, right? Your kid's going to get shot. If he doesn't get shot, that's going to be the tremendous, like, you know, right. unlikelihood. Like,
not if, but when.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At some point.
Yeah.
And children today are experiencing anxiety like no other generations before them. Mm-hmm. And so I just went to an orientation for my children for high school. And I'm already considering my options, especially after this orientation, where 70% of the orientation was speaking about mental health and their concerns and all the people on campus that are there to speak with them. And as I'm thinking that, you know, through this, I'm thinking about you mm-hmm. and the many times I've heard you, you know, speak to the power that we have as parents. And why would I want to give that over to these people that I don't know their agenda? Well, I don't.
Mm-hmm. But
so what do you attribute this level of anxiety and depression to? And how is
institutionalized education contributing
to the epidemic?
Children are unmoored. There was a good book that I read years back about how children used to have chores. And mm-hmm. because, you know, we've become so advanced and so so prosperous, we don't need our children necessarily to do the lawn, to mow the lawn, to do the weeding, to take out the garbage, to clean the house. We don't need our children to do that. We hire people to do that, or, you know, that's a dangerous paradigm, because when children were invested with responsibility to the family, instead of just being responsible to the school, to the baseball team, to the cheer team, to whatever, right? When they were responsible for being a cog in the wheel of the family, their lives had value. They knew where they stood. Mm. They knew that they mattered.
They feel seen.
If they didn't, they felt seen. Yeah. If they didn't, if they weren't there to take care of the baby when mom needed the oldest daughter or whatever to take care of the baby would suffer. They were valuable. They're not valuable anymore. And our entire culture craps all over them. Our entire culture now hates children. Look at the DNC today.
Yeah.
I don't know whether this is airing, but they're celebrating child sacrifice. They are the child sacrifice party. Our major national political party celebrates child sacrifice. You think that, I mean, the entire culture is against children. We rob children of their childhoods. It's almost like we're jealous, right? I went to school. I put up with it. He better go to school and put up with it. I'm not going to make it easy for him. It was hard enough for me. No. Let's take a step back. Let's protect our children.
Absolutely.
Let's be the better people.
You have J.D. Vance speaking on this and talking mm-hmm. about how the left hates children or they're not pro-family or pro-child, and they scoff at this and they make fun of him and say it's weird, and yet they're doing this right outside of the DNC.
Right.
You know, they're giving away abortions and vasectomies, but they're saying they're pro-family.
Yes. And it's funny because he made a comment about the childless cat ladies. Mm-hmm. And so now they're like leaning into everybody wants to be a childless cat lady. No, there's a stereotype for a reason. Nobody wants to be the childless cat lady. Like, right. Because we know that those people exist.
Well, I like, Sam, how you brought it home with, you know, you need to spend the time where the time is valuable, right? And like, I know we talk with Ted Berry from Movie Guide, and he emphasizes this kind of thing too, because between school and between entertainment, we get the least amount of time in front of our kids versus the two of those things if we're not homeschooling. So essentially, you've given school over to a private school or a public school, and then you've got the entertainment factor where they sit in front of a TV and what are they watching? And ultimately, as parents, you know, you think that one Sunday a week we go to church, maybe they go to youth group once a week, and exactly. that's gonna cover it, right? Like, we could totally combat the world, right?
The thing is, now that we're seeing how decrepit our schools are, and I struggle because I want to defend private schools, but I struggle to defend them because their entire paradigm is the same as the public school. Mm. And their textbooks, by and large, are very similar, if not the same as the public school. And the textbooks have all been, I shouldn't speak in absolutes, but most of the textbooks have been perverted by the DEI and the woke agenda and the CRT and you know, the alphabet.
And the teaching to test.
Right. Yeah, there's so many issues with the system itself. The system itself is not a failure. It is succeeding because this is what it wants to create. It wants to create a rote citizenry that only follows orders. And if that's what you hope for your child, then by all means, leave them in that system, because the system will turn out an obedient, unthinking, unable to solve problems individual. That's what the system turns out. Yeah. So if you take that and you go, so that's the one alternative, and let's assume the bullet wasn't loaded for that round, and that kid, you know, escaped so-called unscathed by the whole agenda that is now churning in our schools, but that kid just made good grades, is a good student, whatever. You've still destroyed the family relationship. And so what do you hope for the future? That child, I mean, you might hope that he moves to New York and gets an office with a view, and hopefully maybe gets married and doesn't end up getting divorced. Like that's a whole treadmill that is not seductive. It doesn't look that good to me. I know that that's the culture's definition of success, but that's not my definition of success. I want my children to know how to be good people, how to be loving, how to receive love, how to forgive people, how to ask for forgiveness, how to donate to charity, how to be charitable, how to help somebody grieve. You know, these are the things of education. And while our kids are being distracted by, Even if it were just academics, being distracted by the only academics version of the school that we all would love to believe it were, it's not, but we would love to believe it were that, even if that was it, they would still be missing out on everything that I, as an adult human being, have to impart to my children. And absolutely. So what I'm saying to people is, you as a human being are so much more successful than the 22-year-old Marxist college graduate who is assigned to your child randomly by an authority figure that you don't respect. Mm-hmm. You know, why are you relying on that? You have much more to offer. Now, can you teach your child calculus? Like, if that's the scariest part for you, don't worry. All the answers are in the book, and maybe your kid doesn't need calculus. Now, that's hard for me to say because I love calculus and I was really looking forward to teaching my kids calculus. They don't need it and they don't want it. And I kind of understand that. It's too bad. I loved it, but you know, we didn't do that. So
I don't think I've used any portion of calculus in my entire life.
You haven't calculated the volume of a sphere inside a cone recently?
Oh, no.
I will never forget I got in trouble with my father, who was helping me with my calculus work when I was in high school. I was in public school. And I looked at him and I said, who will ever use this in their career, in their lives? And he turns to me and said, well, I use this formula today at my work as an electrical engineer. And I said, thank you, Dad. That really makes me feel great. I have yet to use any of the calculus I learned. I still don't know.
And you work in finance. Well, I just kind of want to pivot a little bit because you spoke on some very godly characteristics that we all want our children to have. And the one that we forget so often or that we think is unattainable is virtue. So it's a topic that's scoffed at by many in society today, yet it sits at the core of our Christian values. So why do you see Christian parents struggling to discuss purity with their kids?
They don't read the Bible because they went to school. And in school, you learn four foundational lessons that are sort of just imparted to you. It's not sort of done overtly. Mm-hmm. It's covert. You learn to always ask permission, to question. You learn, so don't ask. Mm-hmm. You learn, don't try, because failure's bad, right? So covertly, the message is don't try. Don't think, because the teacher just wants you to regurgitate for the exam what she's told you. So stop the thinking that you're doing, because that can't end well, right? Just mm-hmm. regurgitate.
Because they certainly don't want you to question in class. Mm-hmm. No.
Right. And then don't read, because the teacher read the book. She'll tell you what's in it. There's no reason for you to read. And all the reading assignments, especially these days, are awful. So they're basically gearing the child up to hate to read. And so the child's never going to crack a book. And I remember graduating high school going, wow, if I never have to crack a book. Well, and I misspeak because I shouldn't have said that. I did not graduate high school. But I remember leaving high school going, wow, if I never have to crack a book again, that would be wonderful. So it's don't ask, don't try, don't think, don't read. And then what happens is we have Christians who go to church, but they think they don't have to read the Bible because the pastor read it and the pastor's going to tell them what's in it. And then we have these wimpy, namby-pamby pastors who don't subscribe, actually, to true doctrine. And they basically, they don't read the book because they went to school and they learned everything that they needed to learn.
Incredible.
So the thing that I tell parents, the number one thing to do for your child, if you're home educating, this was the number one thing I did, and I did not know that I was accomplishing what I was accomplishing while I was doing this. But we read the Bible every day as a family, 15, 20 minutes. Like, it wasn't even like this huge investment, because I don't want to make it onerous for parents. Mm-hmm. But if that's all you do, your child will figure out virtue, honor, truth, all the good things, because that book is an incredible book that somehow, with the stories that are in it, and it's a good book, like it's good storytelling.
It is.
Somehow with those stories, your kids figure it out. My kids are so fervent today because of that. And I would have to say nothing else. I mean, we went to church, yes, and they did some youth group stuff, and they all did Summit Ministries, which is really exceptional. Mm-hmm. And I think that actually was instrumental on their journey. Mm-hmm. But it was reading the Bible every day, man, that taught them that truth existed and that it was worth pursuing. And that virtue existed and it was worth pursuing. Yeah.
Your kids are incredible. I follow, by the way. So I know that you have spoken about how Octavia is it that she's now interested in college, as were your two sons were not. And I know that I had seen your husband speaking at a Christian film event, and he'd said that he had your boys audition for the role in Let There Be Light, which I did see is amazing, by the way, tearjerker.
Oh, thank you.
But, you know, as a mother, it must make you really proud to see them not just, you know, following along in some course that you mapped out, and you know, but they're doing what God put on their heart.
That's part of it, right? So mm-hmm. when you're home educating, you realize that they have a little bit of autonomy. They have a little bit of a self-determination. And it's your job to lean into that. and help them figure it out because you want them to be happy. Mm-hmm. Whereas when they're in school and they're distracted by what the school determines has value, right? The school determines that an A has value mm-hmm. and an F has no value, which really is wrong, right? Mm-hmm. Thomas Edison said, I didn't fail 10,000 times. I found 10,000 ways not to invent a light bulb.
Right.
and so we ought to recalibrate our thinking, not just on education, but on the very foundations of our schools, right? Mm-hmm. When I realized, and that was a bit of an epiphany for me, because when I started the homeschool journey, I was all about the academics. I thought that it was all about academics because I went to school.
Well, that's what
and
we
for
are
me, thinking. School was all academic. And then I started to realize, oh, this is more about character. This is about, envisioning a future with my child.
Mm. Yeah, Sam, it's very interesting. As part of Timothy Plan, we've had the privilege of going to a lot of these homeschool conferences over the years, and there's a gigantic community out there. With Trump running and getting political again a little bit, but with Trump running again for presidency here and announcing his Agenda 47, he has kind of delved into the use of 529 plans. And I'm very familiar with those being working for Timothy Plan and how they can be used for school, but they were never really allowed to use for homeschool. And now he's looking at the avenue of opening that up for homeschool families. What would that mean for parents out there to have an option like that?
It's probably just another tax savings opportunity, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know that it's much more than that. I looked at, you can, if you're a homeschooler, you can avail yourself of a 529 plan?
Yeah, 529, yep.
And I opted against it because at that point, when I first started looking at it, I was like, are my kids going to go to college? Cause I don't need it to pay for their current school. Cause I homeschool them, you know, I am skeptical of any government intervention.
Hmm. Interesting.
Full stop. So, we have school choice. That seems to be really big. I sort of equate that with pro-choice in my book. It's like a bad word because I'm not pro-choice. I know that sounds like, well, then you're exclusive or whatever. Yeah, I have pretty exclusive views on life, the value of life. But also the school choice movement with the vouchers and stuff, mm-hmm. it is proving to be fraught with problems. And very quickly. So 1 year, Arizona puts in the ESAs or the education savings account, mm-hmm. and they're so proud of themselves. No strings attached. It's a great thing. Parents are going to be, they're going to avail themselves of all this money and it's going to be great for them. No. Tuition skyrocketed. So then they were still priced out of the market in any case, right? And then the government decided the next year, oh, you know what? We are going to put a couple little strings, just a few strings. We want you to do this, this, and this for the money. And that's going to go way downhill very quickly. And it's actually government takeover. So it really means school choice movement really devolves into, and, you know, we could walk all the way through this, but basically it's public school for all. Hmm. It's the elimination of homeschool.
Interesting.
And more than that, it's the elimination of the homeschool groups or co-ops or the homeschool outreach that will not seek government accreditation.
Okay.
It will price them out of the market. Because if they don't seek accreditation, then they won't get any of the funding that the government magnanimously returns to the people. Remember, it came from you to begin with.
Right.
Right? So it's literally public school for all. It is a very dangerous movement because it's so seductive. It's so sexy. It's so pretty. Don't you want school choice? Don't you want your kids to be able to choose? Sadly.
Wow. That's not the way I'd have thought about it.
That's really eye-opening.
Yeah. In a conservative circle, school choice is like,
yes,
it's everything, you know?
Yes, sadly.
Yeah.
So when you're speaking of accreditation, I think, classical conversations.
Yes.
Are they accredited?
Nope. She will never.
See, and that
absolutely not.
And that's just one of the best that there
Which is why I like them.
Right.
Right? In fact, you know, my daughter was looking for a college, and I found a college that seemed to be basically a continuation of Classical Conversations. Not accredited. And I went, oh, not accredited? Mm-hmm. That sounds good. Right? So that's the problem that we're facing. Because with the school choice movement, the accreditation's going to come, and it's going to further separate out and alienate all of the entities that don't want to jump through government hoops. And I think we've learned now that the government hoops are not necessarily beneficial for us.
Right.
So the other thing is, like, in Florida, you get like $8,000.
Mm-hmm.
The child costs $16,000.
Right.
Who's getting the other eight? Where's the other eight going? I'm sorry. I'm a little bit of a stickler for the math on this.
Yeah, no, it's a really good point, and we need to have those conversations.
Sam, I did have another question. It's more along the lines of just general homeschooling. You've already addressed, I think, one of everyone's biggest hurdles. Like, what do I do when I have to teach my child calculus, and I don't know how to do it? What are some other common fears that you hear people express when they talk about homeschooling for the first time?
So I'll take a step back, because I don't know that I really addressed the calculus thing, because it's a little bit bigger than just the answers are in the book.
Yeah.
Because what happens is when you walk down the homeschool path from an early enough age, you're teaching your child autonomy, and you're training the child to be self-sufficient. It happens naturally. It's not like a purposeful thing. But what happens is your child has a little book that is like beginning grammar or beginning logic or something. Mm-hmm. And he comes to you and he says, I tried to do the first question, but I don't understand it. Can you explain it to me? And so you say, did you read the chapter? And he says, sure. No, he didn't read the chapter. So you turn back and you read the chapter with him. Mm-hmm. And the moment he figures out the answer to the question, he wants to turn back and answer the question. And you say, no. You read the chapter, and then the questions serve to jog your memory to see if it's stuck. Mm-hmm. So read the whole chapter first and then do the questions, right? And all of a sudden, you've taught him how to teach himself. Mm-hmm. By the time he gets to calculus, he won't need you to teach him calculus. That's how it works.
That's right.
The reason that we don't believe that it works that way is because we went to school and we learned that we needed a teacher, because
right.
we were trained to think that we needed a teacher. And so we're upending the whole thing. The other question that parents all have, well, curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
Curriculum's the big question. I actually created a curriculum for parents, and it teaches them that they don't actually need curricula because let's put it this way. Education is a software download. School is data entry.
Hmm.
We are not in the business of data entry. We don't want robots. We're not programming computers. We are downloading our software, our doctrine. We're downloading into our children so that they think and believe similarly to us with their own independent thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, the data accumulation is on them. They go find the data. They do the research, because we want them to go do research. What the schools are turning out are kids that have a very limited data set that are making judgment calls based on this very limited data set. Republicans are bad.
Mm-hmm.
That's their data set. Trump evil. Mm-hmm. Orange man bad, right? That's their data set that they're getting in school. Their data set is there are 78 different genders.
Mm-hmm.
They're not taught to question, well, what's the 78th gender? Like, I get that there are 77, but what's the 78th, right? They're not taught to question any of that. And so so when you start to look at it that way, it changes the way you will go about it.
Mm-hmm.
It is not school at home. It is not data entry. Mm-hmm. It's growing with your child. It's shepherding your child into adulthood. It's a different paradigm. And the final question is socialization, which I just laugh at, because mm-hmm. the kids today in schools are taught that they can poop in a litter box in the hallway. I would never wish that kind of socialization on my child. People think that children get socialized in school. The only reason that we believe that is because that is the only outlet that we think exists. Because school is just normal. School is the default.
And just a note and so, to that one yeah. right there. You know, this week, like I said, my son, he just started ninth grade in high school. And he said, Mom, it's not as easy as it used to be to make friends. And he grew up going to Christian private school. Mm-hmm. And what's happened is obviously there's the technology boundary. These kids have, I mean, they had, what, 2 years in their homes during COVID. They have no communication skills whatsoever. So they meet each other, and when a child walks up to them and says, hi, I'm so-and-so, you know, looks them in the eye, shakes the hand, it's weird.
Yeah. So he's the weird one now because he knows how to be social. So the other thing, that's socialization. And what I like to say is correlation, just because they go to school and they – in theory, turnout socialized, mm-hmm. does not mean causation. Correlation is not causation. So your children get social by you teaching them how to be social.
Navigating through investment options can be challenging, especially when you're determined to uphold your God-given values. Every dollar you invest is a vote for the world that you want to live in. Let your values guide your investment
Navigating
decisions
through investment options
and help
can
to
be
shape the culture. Especially when you're determined to uphold your God-given values.
Become a beacon of
Every
light.
Every dollar you invest
pave
is
the
a
way
vote for the world
biblically
that you want
responsible
to live in.
Investing.
Let your values guide your investment
Timothy
decisions
plan.
And help to shape the culture
and
in which we live.
Before investing, carefully
become
consider
a beacon
the funds
of light
investment objectives
and pave the way
charges
with biblically
and
responsible
of the
investing
company. This and other important information can
Timothy
be
plan.
To
where faith and finance collide.
Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives,
risk charges,
and
expenses
of the investment
company.
What are some other myths or lies that parents tell themselves about why they can't homeschool?
When these are our kids, and why have we just
gone along with this idea that they belong to somebody else?
Because we went to school. We were schooled. We were never educated. We were schooled. We think we were educated. And I'm sad that I have to bring this news to people. Like, but I went to Duke University and I wasn't educated. I got educated after school, and most people did. Mm-hmm. Most people who are educated taught themselves after school. So ask yourself, are you doing for a living? Like daily? Are you doing what you went to school for? Most people, 95% of people, don't do what they went to school for. And even if they do it, they will admit that they learned much more once they got into the workforce, because that's where you actually learn. So we tell ourselves, so there's this weird paradigm where we privatize or personalize failure. If I can't learn math, that's on me. I don't have a math brain, right? But if I succeed in XYZ writing, if I'm a great writer, it's because of my schooling. And so we corporatize our success, because that's the offset that we've been trained under. Mm-hmm. School is successful where you're successful. You're a failure where you failed. Mm-hmm. And it's not the school that failed you. But I can attest that most people who feel like they can't do math, I can lay it at the feet of the school for most people. And people listening to this will probably be saying, oh my gosh, absolutely. I remember the day my teacher said the thing and I knew that I was never going to do math. I just wasn't going to get whatever, right? And I've gotten emails like that from people. And so we personalize the failure, but we somehow corporatize the success. And we think that school is beneficial because we were trained. We were schooled K through 12, 13 years. School good, school good, school good, 5 days a week for 270 days a year or whatever it is. And it's a lie, sadly. It's a lie. School is the grand experiment. Here's the proof. We live in the greatest country in the world. Mm-hmm. This country has produced the greatest prosperity for the world, for the entire world. Unbeknownst to anybody heretofore, this country, founded by 56 Christian men mm-hmm. who were all homeschooled. Mm-hmm. School is the grand experiment. Mm-hmm. We have to stop this horrifying, toxic experiment on our children. We must stop it.
Wow. Yeah.
We have to look at the results and say, oh, this was a bad idea. Look at all the people who are super successful who never graduated.
Oh, yeah. There's a list of them.
Because they got smart enough to go, oh man, this isn't going to work. I don't need this. Now businesses are waking up. So businesses have started to hire kids out of high school. They don't want the college graduates. College graduates can't get jobs because they get degrees in stupid things that have nothing to do with reality.
Right.
Like the whole thing is sort of imploding, and we're just hanging on by our teeth because we're so afraid of change, because we've been so indoctrinated by our own schooling.
Oh, absolutely. We had CEO of the Red Balloon, Andrew Krepyshets, on the show just a couple of weeks ago. And he was talking about how there just isn't a pool of employable young people right now. Obviously, because of what's happening on college campuses, and they come out with this sense of entitlement. And he says when they do come across one, they're incredible. And they're usually, you know, Christian or conservative, and they've been taught how to look somebody in the eye and shake their hand and be polite.
And be responsible.
And be responsible.
Be accountable.
Have character. Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, Sammy took a shot right at me, you know, and it's probably most of my friends, too, I think, is the same thing.
I didn't mean it. What did I say?
I went to college. I got my degree and what I thought I was going to do. And now I am doing something that has nothing to do with my degree. And I learned everything I learned by being on the job.
Right.
And that could sum up not just myself, but most of my friends as well in the career path.
Yeah, that's my point. That's absolutely my point. And the most successful of my friends are not college goers. They never went to college. They just got it figured out by themselves.
Well, my degree sits pretty in the back of my office, so I can say I did it.
It's pretty.
It's in a frame. Before we let you go, we wanted to cover one last thing that wasn't necessarily homeschooling. Talk a little bit about your book, Words for Warriors, A Fight Back Against Crazy Socialists and the Toxic Liberal Left. It's received some critical acclaim and tackles some really important political and cultural issues. So what inspires you to write this book, and what do you hope that readers will take away from it?
Yeah, so we live in a time of universal deceit. We have a political party that is busy lying to the American public. Mm-hmm. And the thing that inspired me to write the book was the word fascism. So Antifa is a fascist movement. Just because they call themselves anti-fascist doesn't mean they're not fascists, and doesn't mean they're actually anti-fascist. Mm-hmm. They are, in fact, fascist. They have all of the tactics of the fascist left. To go along with that, they've rebranded fascism to be right-wing. They just redefined it and said it's a right-wing thing because they need to brand the right as violent. But the right is the opposite of violent. The right seeks to compromise. The right seeks to we're way too nice, frankly. You know, the most intolerant thing is the truth. The truth is absolutely intolerant of the lie, which is why the left is so angry, because they're very busy lying and they hate being called out on by the truth. So fascism was the word that sort of spurred me on to write the book. I needed to codify in, you know, words, the actual definition of fascism, which is basically communism with a different political, slightly different political structure. But the end result is the same. So in communism, you don't own the factory and the government does what it wants with the factory. In fascism, you get to own the factory and the government does what it wants with the factory. So it's the same thing, and it's totalitarian, and it's all the same. But somehow they decided, well, Hitler was a fascist. He wasn't. He was a socialist, right? They changed history. Mm-hmm. He did join forces with Mussolini, who was a fascist, but Hitler was a socialist, which is the equivalent of a communist. The problem was, after World War II, or during World War II, we joined forces with the communists of Russia, and we vanquished the Nazis. And Winston Churchill wanted to go in and finish the commies because he knew how evil communism was. FDR, being socialist, didn't really want to pursue that. He was good with getting rid of the national socialists of Germany because everybody could see that they were really evil. The commies were so much more evil. The commies, I mean, if there's a death count, the commies beat the socialists every time. Like, there's no comparison. But at the Nuremberg trials, because we hadn't gone after the communists after the, you know, during the war, they sat in judgment. The communists sat in judgment over the socialists, which must have driven the Nazis crazy, because they're like, you killed so many more people than I ever even thought about killing. Why are you sitting in judgment? And then after the war, they morphed the National Socialism to say nationalism is bad. Socialism's not that bad. It was the national part, which is why we're in the fight now for our identity.
Christian nationalists. Mm-hmm.
And why they now put Christian with national and Christian. Like, is this the worst kind of nationalism? You know, it's absurd. We're all team players. Everybody believes in team play. We're all, right? We all have a football team or a baseball team or whatever. Why can't we have a Team USA? And we do. We send them to the Olympics.
Yeah.
But somehow putting up a border and saying, well, Team USA is on this side of the border. Oh, no, you can't have that. Although at the DNC, they put up a pretty, pretty serious border. And they're demanding ID before you're allowed to get in, which is why it's so empty inside the hall. Because apparently nobody has IDs anymore. So the whole thing, so I wrote the book and I got a little bit snarky. I think one of the definitions in here, I end with duh, because I just, I get a little bit frustrated that people can be bamboozled, but this is it. That's the definition of fascism. It's a page and a little bit more, and people really enjoy the book. The term after it is feargasm, which came out during COVID, right? We have redefined a number of words, and it's a dangerous thing. The book is dedicated to the word, because in the beginning was the word, and the word was with God, and the word was God. And so the attack on our words is actually an attack on God, just like the attack against our children is an attack on God's image bearers. And that's the world that we live in today.
Words are redefined frequently. I mean, I can't tell you how many times you go online to the Merriam-Webster dictionary, a word means something, and then someone they don't like uses that word in a certain way, and then the definition gets altered to slightly mean something different to accommodate for the person they don't like.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Just like fascism is basically something I don't like.
it's right.
You are a fascist. You are something I don't like.
Right. It's just, it's easy. And we've been trained to do that in school. We've been trained to just, this one judgment, one characteristic, that's it. We see things very black and white with singular characteristics instead of understanding it's the whole person. It's not just the one belief. It's a collection of beliefs. Mm-hmm. And if you can find common ground in one area, maybe you can move their beliefs. Maybe you can affect some change. But the left takes a very firm view about deplorables, right? I do a show every day on patriot.tv, and today I'm actually playing a clip that was put together, and it's a series of different leftists, Democrats, saying, well, we need to have some camps. We need to put these people in camps and re-educate them.
Wow. Yeah.
And they are talking in all seriousness. And the next step to re-education, because frankly, re-education is difficult and expensive. Mm-hmm. You might as well just kill them.
Be easier, faster. Mm-hmm. Well, Sam, where can people find more about you, your homeschooling initiatives, your books, your appearances in
anything
media,
you're working on
everything.
Right now?
So the best place is sorbostudios.com. That's where the shop is. My books are there. I have a couple here I can show you. So this is my first one. They're Your Kids. This is my journey into homeschooling, and it's basically the first part is why you should homeschool. Mm-hmm. It's written before COVID, so it talks a lot about Common Core. Mm-hmm. All of that applies and more today. So the beginning is why you should homeschool, and then the second part is how easy it is, because I want people to understand it's not rocket science. You're competing with a 22-year-old recent graduate from Marxist Training College who only really knows classroom management. It's a skill set you don't even need with your own kids, right? So why are you competing with that? Just take them out of school and do it yourself. And then this is Teach From Love. It's a devotional for families. I go through two virtues. You wanted to have the conversation about virtues. I go through two virtues every week that are sort of coordinate And because it's, we have binocular vision for a reason. We see in 3D. So loyalty and faithfulness is 1 week. And then there are just these five little stories. Some of them are Bible stories and some are just regular everyday stories. And at the end of every week, I have a notations page where you can write down the things that your kids say, because kids say the craziest things sometimes. And people love this book. I have kids coming up to me and thanking me for writing this book. So that's a lot of fun. So sorbostudios.com, be sure you sign up for the newsletter, because that's how we stay in touch with people. Facebook doesn't like us very much. Mm-hmm. Twitter's being very kind these days, but the other social media sites are a little bit rough. And we need to stay informed. And so that's where people can go. And also patriot.tv for my TV show every day, 4 p.m. Eastern.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, thank you, Sam, for joining us on Invested with Purpose, making the most out of our time, talent, and treasure. Invested with Purpose is brought to you by Timothy Partners Limited, advisor to the Timothy Plan Funds. Timothy Plan is a family of biblically responsible mutual funds and ETFs. For more information, please visit Timothy Plan's website at www.timothyplan.com. Some of our podcast guests may have a relationship with Timothy Partners Limited on behalf of Timothy Plan, including affiliations, partnerships, or sponsorships. However, guests are not compensated for their appearances, and their opinions do not constitute paid testimonials. Please be aware that investments carry risks and individual experiences may vary. Consult with a financial advisor for personalized advice. And remember to find us on all of the major social media platforms such as YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn.